As we look at the details of this particular episode in the life of Christ, I hope that what happens here is we can uncover a few things that might help us perhaps understand how to develop more gratitude in our own lives. And I'd like you to think of this today as we look through it as more of an experience rather than, you know, a lesson where I give you this point, that point, and this other point. And I think the way we can do that is by you just imagining yourself there. Okay, this is a particularly unique episode, I think, because number one, it's unique to Luke. He's the only one that mentions this particular thing. And it's almost in contrast, to the context where Jesus has been teaching and lecturing about a number of issues. He's been talking about his mission. We've learned a lot about wealth and the management of wealth through this, the problems associated with it, and so forth. Here, what we learn, and it almost seems like Jesus is learning it too, from the surprise he gets, is from the experience and the character of a foreign-born leper. And there's two elements of that that make this kind of unique and challenging for us. This particular episode apparently stood out in the minds of those who gave to Luke the details about what they had experienced, what they had seen with Christ. And so Luke puts it in here. I'd like to look at it from three different angles today. The setting, the suspense, and the surprise. Now again, I'd like you to kind of think of it as an experience. And so we're looking at this as sort of a little story, one little episode in the life of Christ. And that's essentially what it is. Okay, we know that Jesus is on the way to Jerusalem at this point. And so when we think about the setting, that's one of the things we have to keep in mind. Go all the way back to Luke chapter 9 and verse 51. And that sort of that concept has kind of brought it all the way forward to now. Jesus set his mind at that point to head to Jerusalem. And everything that's happened since has been kind of on the way, on the road to what basically is his destination as well as his destiny. Jesus is going to Jerusalem for a very particular reason. He knows what it is. His disciples don't quite know, other than Jerusalem is the holy city. He's going to suffer and die. But as you look at this episode, it simply says, on the way to Jerusalem. So this is almost like a little aside, almost like something he experienced along the way. Now it says here, and part of our setting here, is the geography of this. In this chapter, we find him somewhere between Samaria and Galilee. And if you would look at a map of Palestine during the days of Christ, Samaria would be kind of in the middle of the land of Palestine with Galilee just north of it. But there would be a border there where the Samaritans lived here and the Galileans lived up here. And we know enough about the Samaritans, I think, that wasn't a great place for a lot of Jews to pass through. But here he was in the land of Samaria. It was probably hill country. A lot of Palestine is that. So envision in your mind's eye walking along the road, and there's hills around. There's hills and valleys and so forth. And just to kind of get the experience of it, I want you to see that in your mind's eye, where he is, what he's doing, okay? Geography hasn't really been all that critical up to this point and may not be for the most part in the Gospels. But it seems to me it kind of gives us some indication not only about what it looks like but about the population of this area. And that's important. This was most likely a place in Palestine where Jews and Samaritans probably intermingled. If for no other reason, even if they tried to avoid one another, the roads led right in the area where some of them lived together. Okay? You know, one of the things we tend to assume, I think a little too much, is that all the Jews would have gone around Samaria just so they wouldn't have to go through it. Not so sure that's the case with everybody. There would have been some who felt that they were kind of above mingling with Samaritans, but I'm not sure everybody did. And it says here Jesus was about to enter a village. It doesn't say whether it was a Samaritan village or a Galilean village, so we don't really know which side of the border he's on here. Seems like he's kind of right in that area where there would have been some of both. So what does this tell us about the society in terms of our setting here? That's what we're talking about. What does this tell us about the society? We know that there was a lot of religious and racial tension between the groups. the Samaritans. And just bear with me, those of you who know a lot about the Samaritans, just give me a moment or two. For those who may not know quite as much, let me explain a little bit about who they were. It goes all the way back to the Old Testament, actually. In one period of history during the Old Testament, the northern tribes, which would have been 10 of the 12, there were 12 tribes of Israel, 10 of the 12 were taken away into captivity and the other two remained in the land. Now, when those 10 were taken away into captivity, we know it's because of their idolatry, but one of the things that happened by the conquering nation was they brought some of their people and resettled in the land of the northern tribes, and it became the land that was known as Samaria, even by then. But they intermarried with them. Some of the people were not taken away. Some of the Jews remained. But what had happened is they intermingled and intermarried with these foreigners. And so the purebred Jews, the people of the southern tribes, looked at them as kind of half-breeds. I don't know if it was ever said quite that way, but they weren't full-blood Jews, okay? And they had mixed their religion a little bit. They still carried some of the traditions that were put in place when the 10 northern tribes broke off. And so there was not only a difference in who they were, but there was a little bit of a difference in what they believed. There was some connection, but not a whole lot. The Samaritans were not considered full Israelites. And that's why, perhaps, they were avoided. They maintained some elements of the Jewish tradition. Some of the people of the history of the Jews, they would have maintained them as their tradition and forefathers, but their religion had been commingled and compromised. And when Jesus in John chapter 4 discusses that with a woman of Samaria, he makes it very clear that salvation is from the Jews. They've missed something, okay? That doesn't mean they were any less important. It just means they were missing some of the really important things about the Israelite faith. Suffice it to say, these two groups did not mix well together. And so, here's where we begin to start using a little more of our imagination. And so, now we begin to imagine the lepers themselves. You have to remember here that Jesus is not alone when he's walking along the road. He's got a pretty large contingent of disciples with him. He's accompanied by the apostles. He's accompanied by many others. Can you see yourself in the crowd here? That's what I want you to do. I want you to just see yourself in the crowd with Jesus as somehow he experiences these 10 lepers. And this is where the suspense comes in, our second point. You know, every good story has a conflict, doesn't it? It's the conflict or suspense or mystery or something that the protagonist of the story has to overcome. We have a kind of suspense here, and suspense on several levels, actually. Not the least of which is the suspense of these outcasts. Part of the suspense here occurs when these lepers cry out to Jesus. Remember, you're in the crowd. Maybe you can even see them off in the distance. Their very presence creates a certain amount of tension and fear. They were supposed to stay far away from the rest of society because of their disease. It was a communicable disease. And they were, even by law, they were told, you're not supposed to go near. Separate yourself until such time, if that time ever comes, that your leprosy has been healed. Maybe you're thinking to yourself at this point, boy, I sure hope they don't come any closer. And, you know, when they speak, you can almost feel the crowd tense up. You know, the tension almost becomes palpable. You can perhaps cut it with a knife. It's like, ooh, what are they going to do? All right? And though we don't know the full makeup of the group, we have a very interesting thing here that goes on. Leprosy has broken down all of their religious and social barriers. Because what we see here are apparently Jews and Samaritans together. We know at least one of them was a Samaritan. And they had banded together. They were outcasts for no reason of their own, not because of who they were, but simply because their disease was dangerous to everyone else. But it had broken down these social barriers. Here were Jews and Samaritans together in one group, Lepers, admittedly, but still together in one group. They're alienated from society by law, by the law of Moses even, which is there to protect the community, but they still felt like outcasts. And even if they were obeying the law, they were still on the outskirts of society, weren't they? They were not allowed to participate in all the normal activities. They weren't allowed to go into the town. They weren't allowed to, I don't know how they got fed, whether somebody just left them food or just what happened. But you have to imagine that they had a lot of different ways of going about that. That was simply they were limited by their disease. So they were outcasts anywhere you look at it, or any way you look at this. Now you're in the crowd, and what do you hear? Jesus, Master, have mercy on us. Oh, I see those lepers. Now they want to get Jesus' attention. Can you feel the tension in the crowd? They knew who he was, these lepers. They apparently knew his reputation for healing. And Jesus does not even hesitate here. He doesn't ask them to come over. He just says to them, go show yourself to the priest. Now, this too was prescribed by law for lepers and their cleansing. The priest had to be able to see that, in fact, their leprosy was gone and make a pronouncement. I don't know if he gave them a certificate. It was probably obvious to everyone else by this point that they were, in fact, healed because they no longer had leprosy. Okay? And, you know, there's a certain amount of... There's conflict on their part. There has been conflict in their part ever since they've gotten this disease. And the conflict is they have never been able to participate in society. So there's been suspense on their part. There's been this period of life that I'm going to die outside of the love and affection of everyone else that I know. That's pretty horrible. And Jesus says to them, just go show yourselves to the priest. Okay, they don't seem to hesitate. We don't see and hear any other dialogue. We don't know if anything else goes on. We don't know if they're all talking to themselves. Well, why does he ask us to do that? Why don't he just heal us? Why can't he just touch us? Blah, blah, blah. We don't know any of that. And maybe it's not important that we know any of that. All we know is on the way, they apparently are looking at themselves and they look at one another. Now, again, maybe you're a part of the lepers at this point, all right? And you're looking at your hands. It disfigures your body, basically. But they're looking at each other and they're like, hey, what's wrong with you? Well, nothing anymore. How did that happen? Well, didn't he just tell us to go show ourselves to the priest? And presumably, this would have been a witness to the priest, to the healing power of Jesus himself. But this is where the conflict of their unhealed and alienated lives turns into a surprise. And that's really what this story is about, in a way. It's about surprise. Now, in one sense, we're not surprised that they're healed. Are we? None of us, looking at the story, knowing what we've known about Jesus up to this point, I'm not sure it was even a surprise to them, although it may have been. It probably surprised how it happened. Just one moment they're sick, the next moment they're not. I don't know if it was a gradual thing as they were walking along, or they just sort of looked at each other and went, hey, how'd that happen? They all knew, at least one knew, how it happened. And you see, his power was well known, so the disciples, they're not surprised any more than we are as readers of this text. We're not surprised that that happened. The lepers, however, may have been. I'm not really sure how much they believed that it was going to happen to them. Do you? They obviously obeyed Jesus when he said, go on to the priest and show yourself to him. We don't really know any more about what they were thinking. We just know that somewhere along the line, this big surprise. And you just have to get the picture of their diseased bodies suddenly cleansed. How would you feel? Whew. Finally. I've been living with this for X number of years. I don't know which of them may have had it the longest, sort of the senior member of the group, but 10 of them had been banded together for a long time, probably, and they banded together because they needed each other. And then all of a sudden, surprise, surprise, they encounter Jesus and there's hope. Hope turns to reality on the way. And they're, you know, you have to say they're at least moved by it. Whether it's a kind of selfish thing, okay, I'm healed now, I'm just going to go on my way. I don't want to impose that particular motivation on them, because I don't know. I don't know exactly what they were thinking. We know that there was elation. Wouldn't you be? Wouldn't you be, literally, you would be elated to think that now I can go back to my family, I can have a normal life, if there was anything such as normal. I could get married, I could get a job, I could, you know, maybe I've been married and I had to leave my family, I can go back to them now. We don't know their situation, but you can only imagine, if you use a little bit of thinking and kind of picture it in your head, just what they were going through and how now, wow, one day I was a nobody, now I'm back to being, well, maybe not somebody, but at least somebody to a few people. I can participate again. In at least one of them, his surprise immediately develops into thanksgiving. And as he is described here, it says he comes back to Jesus with a loud voice and falls at his feet. Now, again, put yourself back at the crowd. Wasn't that guy one of the lepers? You see, you can see him coming from a distance. He's probably got the same clothing on, but he looks different. Maybe you're still a little tense because you think maybe he's still got leprosy and he shouldn't be here. He comes in anyway. He just, you know, you can't stop him. Even if you had tried to stop him, you probably can't. He is so elated. And he comes out with a loud voice, praising God, thank you, Jesus, you have healed me. You've had mercy on me. Might they have been initially resistant to having the man come close? Probably so, but now that they see and now that they hear what he says, they're like, oh, okay. But there's one big surprise here. We're not surprised that they would come to Jesus for healing. We're not surprised that Jesus could heal him. But doesn't Jesus seem a little surprised here? That's the real big surprise of this, is Jesus himself. Gratitude is the biggest surprise of all. The leper came and thanked him. I don't know that Jesus expected any of them to return at first. He said, just go show yourselves to the priest. You know, there were often, more often than not, times in Jesus' life when he would heal people. He said, don't go tell anybody. I want you to just keep it quiet. And they would not. Okay. Here he says, go show yourself to the priest. That's all he wants them to do. It's all that's necessary. But maybe he's surprised by one who comes back. But he's even more surprised that there's only one. 10% of those who are healed come back. I mean, is that how much gratitude is in the world? Only 10% of people express gratitude? I don't think that's the intention, but I think that's a way to think about gratitude. Gratitude's kind of in short supply, isn't it? Maybe that's what surprises Jesus. I know, Jesus knows everything, but he seemed to express surprise here. Where are the other nine? Weren't 10 of them cleansed? I kind of wonder if the disciples themselves, you in the crowd, are surprised to see a Samaritan demonstrate what their fellow Jews should have done as well. And maybe a little embarrassed for your fellow Jews. I'm sort of thinking of what some of us may think, some of what them may have thought. Could have been a little embarrassing. Yeah, this one guy. Jesus notes the fact, one foreigner comes back. Where's the other guys? Where are all those, technically, you think about what he's implying here. Where are all the others who should have known better? They should have shown gratitude. Are we surprised here that gratitude is in short supply? My guess is probably not. I remember many, many years ago, we had, around the time that we have our holiday banquet, we would often have various projects. And one of the projects one year was to buy toys for children who did not have money in their families. And we gave them to one of the local government agencies, I don't know if it was DIFAS, somebody who was caring for these orphans and children who, you know, who were poor. And not long after we had done all that around Christmas time, come the first of the year, we received a thank you note from this government agency. And one of the elders here, named Gene Cook, said to me, he says, you know, in all my years, never have I ever gotten a thank you note from a government agency. And I, you know, it's not just government agencies here, but gratitude's kind of in short supply, isn't it? That's the surprise for all of us. We wish it were not so. Can we not make it so in our lives that gratitude is not in short supply? Isn't that a good message to go away with? It's not like we're beating each other over the head with anything. We're just saying, guys, can we just learn to be thankful? Learn to be thankful to other people, to God, you know, in simple ways for simple things. Think about a time that you were thanked for something and how good maybe it made you feel because somebody recognized what you did for them. Worship and gratitude really do go hand in hand, don't they? I think gratitude is a learned behavior. It's something we practice. I think it comes from seeing what God is able, from being able to see what God has really done for us, even in small things. You don't need to be healed of leprosy, but if you've been saved, you have a good reason to be thankful. And maybe you have reason to be thankful to other people for what they do and who they are. My encouragement today, learn to be thankful, but if you accept the gospel of forgiveness, you'll know what it means to be thankful. And so we want you to consider accepting the gospel today. Believe in Jesus. You need to express faith in him. You need to be able to be baptized for the remission of sins. And you need to live your life, quite frankly, in gratitude for what he's done. Think about that while together we stand and sing our song.